Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 470. My name is John Morgan, and Cole Coffee is with me here on the rarest of rare weeks in Las Vegas, it seems. I mean, there's no UFC event in town. We're chilling at home, no traveling, nothing to do. I was going to say it felt different, but then I came over to your house, the palatial Casa de Cole Coffee, for today's episode, and you were working on processing media day video. Yeah. So I was just going to say, isn't this crazy, Cole Coffee? It's so weird. It's so, we don't do what we do every Wednesday. And then I come to find out you're doing what we do every Wednesday.
Yeah. But there is something better about being here in the house waiting. It's, you know, it's funny. Like, even though when you're waiting for somebody to send you footage, you know, if you're there at the Apex, it's just nonstop. But I did find time when I was waiting for a video, because the internet supposedly has been really sort of iffy there at the hotel, which, imagine that, it happens.
Yep.
I was able to, like, hard boiled some eggs. I had a little breakfast. I made some coffee. I was like, you know, granted, I was tethered to a seat for a good solid 6 hours.
Yeah.
But it's not as bad as I'd rather be 6 hours sitting in my office as opposed to 6 hours sitting in the Apex.
That's right. You know? So at least it's a little bit better.
A little bit better.
You get to do some things. And it really is different because, thanks to Josh Hernandez, we get to do things that we don't normally do on a Wednesday. Now, this has been a couple months in the making, so let me offer my sincerest apologies to Josh Hernandez that
long
it took
overdue.
This long to get it done. But and now I will say there were a couple of attempts made on the way.
Yes, that's true.
Where we were like, hey, today we got to make good. But Josh Hernandez was kind enough to Venmo over a couple of bucks to pay for some frosty beverages, his favorite kind, Busch Light. And he said, look, feel free to get any kind you like, man. Just a little thanks for me. I enjoy the show, and I want you guys to have some frosty beverages on me. But you know how we are. We're
Did
like,
he say it was his favorite?
No, he didn't actually.
I can't remember if we were talking about him, and that's what made him want to send them to us.
I thought it was his. I thought that was his beer. Well,
I don't want to put that on him. He's like, y'all were talking shit.
He's like,
I'm an import guy. Don't you Busch Light me?
Don't
take me to the Busch Leagues. He's like, I'm big time. Don't take me Busch League.
Now that you mention it, he didn't mention that it was just I thought it was like it was kind of his go-to or whatever. And so there were a couple times where I stopped by a store on the way, and I was like, they didn't have any Busch Light. So finally –
imagine that. It's hard to find.
It's kind of hard to find. And so I actually had to, like, Google. Like, I went to their website and, like, and put in my birth date to ensure that I was of age.
Wow.
And then I Googled, you know, or they had, like, a little search where you can either order it directly or find a place, you know, that has it. And so I drove to it, and I picked up the Busch Light. And so you're right. I want to thank Josh Hernandez, but I also do not want to stick that on him. If this is not his go-to, I can't remember the last time I had a Busch Light. To be honest with you, I couldn't even remember what to expect. But a nice, attractive, cool blue can. I mean, that's
– feels,
I mean,
very, like – for me, you knowing you that you're like a Coors guy, this made me think it was like a Coors.
This is
product.
Lighter than Coors. The logo on the can says cold and smooth. It is cold and smooth. This is, I mean, this this is the equivalent of like beer water.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean? Like,
they probably think that about our PBR as well.
I
literally, as soon as I drank it, it was like
good.
That. It was like that. What did we say? It was the flavor of nostalgia. Like, it literally, I just remembered, like, you know, beer funnel,
sure.
The taste of beer funnel, where a little bit of this taste and a little bit of plastic.
Yep.
You know, it definitely took
been
back
there.
Memories.
We've
but,
all
man,
been.
It wasn't like I was dreading the first drink because it had been so long. Because actually, as soon as we traded, it was just like,
this is actually
pretty good.
I'm going to say, at risk of embarrassing myself here, this is
bad.
For like a hot summer day.
Yes.
This is really, I mean, look.
Yes.
It has no flavor at all. And so when I say it's like beer water, I mean, it's you know, the alcohol percentage is like, what, 4.1, which is pretty
standard
for like light beer. Yeah. So I'm not trying to say that like it's, oh, this is even more watered down than my PBR.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that. It just doesn't have flavor. It's literally like drinking water.
Yeah.
I mean, this is – it's cold and smooth.
For those that like to drink a 12-pack and then drive, you could probably do it with it. I don't
You're
suggest
not supposed
it.
To do that. I don't think you can say that. I don't think you can say that at all.
Dude, but it's not bad at all. It is really not bad at all. It literally it takes me back, man. It's not so bad. I mean, will it go into a normal rotation? No, but if somebody shows up to a gathering with it, am I going to shun them out the front door? No.
I'll be honest. Had somebody showed up to a gathering before today with a Busch Light in their hand, I would probably have laughed at them and made fun of them.
You judge them a little bit?
I would have judged them tremendously. I'd have been like, dude, like, I can give you a couple bucks if you need some help right now. You know what I mean? Like, if you could, but honestly. honestly, it's pretty good.
It's not bad.
Again,
it's not bad.
It doesn't have a lot of flavor. So if you're looking, you know, if you're like, oh, what's the hops level like?
If you got a beer app, you're probably not gonna file this underneath your beer tasting app. But dude, it's not bad at all. It's not bad at all. I could probably go out in the car and grab like one of the funnels, you know, just wash out the oil. We want to do old school. I could find some piping. We can do some.
If we don't finish all these, you could probably put them in the gym so that, like, if you know, when you're out there pumping iron and you need a little hydration, bro, you're just like, let me throw this down. But anyway, shout out to Josh Hernandez.
Thank you, Josh.
Thank you very much. Always appreciated the frosty beverages on you. And
that was long overdue.
Long overdue. Hopefully we'll see you in person someday and we can return the favor to you there. So that is something that we get to do on a non-Vegas fight week. So something else that we got to do recently, we'll talk about all that's going on in Atlantic City, of course, everything that we've gotten to. But how about you getting to be a fan on Friday night? You just got to sit in the crowd and watch some fights at Tough Enough. I was on the call there with Justin James, our good friend there, a mutual friend. It was on UFC Fight Pass, so if you didn't get a chance to see it, check it out. But, man, you got the rare opportunity to just kind of hang out in the crowd. I mean, most of the time, you don't even get to see, like, the UFC fights because you're back in the back working. You're stuck in, you know, processing video and doing interviews with the evening's winners and that sort of thing. But on this particular night, you got to just hang out in the crowd.
And they were good fights?
They were very good fights. Yeah. I will go ahead and say I didn't talk to you about it, but I believe when I did speak to you, you may have consumed a frosty beverage or two at that point in time.
My high school buddy came into town and you know, I had forgot that I'd already agreed to go, like, watch Tough Enough. And then I was like, fuck, well, I guess I'm going to go hang out with my buddy. Sorry, Tough Enough, I'm not going to go. And then I was like, wait, this guy likes fights. I was like, dude, would you like to go see some fights for a little bit? I was like, you know, there's amateur fights and then there's some pros. He's like, dude, that sounds great. And I was like, all right, cool. I was like, I got a plus one. Let's go. I was like, I just have to do some social posts and then they'll be happy that I was there.
Right.
You know? So we end up taking him first, and he had never been there. I took him to Dino's.
Oh,
and it was awesome. Mariah.
Oh, on a Friday night, it was popping.
And it didn't get there quite yet, but it was still pretty early.
Yep.
But one of my longtime bartenders, Mariah, there, she's super cute. She's super friendly. We get in there. So the first thing she does, she's like, give him a big hug, you know. And so then he's like, oh, this place is cool. And then it was just straight PBR. At first, I know he was going to – he's kind of up. He's got some money.
Okay.
So, like,
okay,
he could drink whatever. So I straight went to the PBR game where if you guess the suit, you get your free.
Right.
I was like, this is why I come.
This is it.
And then he first started looking at the taps. Then he'd look at my PBR. Then he'd look at the whiskey bottles and stuff. Then he looked at the PBR. I was like, bro, just do it.
Just
you know you
PBR.
Want to.
Just
so
he
went straight PBR. So we just drank PBR. And we probably had a good belt, maybe 4 or 5 or so before I think we showed up. So for me, I haven't really been drinking a lot lately.
Right.
So, like, I had a nice little happy buzz.
Yeah.
So we roll over there, and since we had missed sort of the beginning, a lot of the seats had sort of filled in. So I didn't know what the deal was. So I was like, hey, you know, sitting in some area, and they pointed us to there, like, okay, we'll find you some seats over here. They take us to the area. We're literally right behind the ring card girls. Like, they actually scooted their chairs forward to make room for us. And so I'm thinking, like, my boy thinks I'm balling.
This is not the worst seat ever.
He's, like, thinking I'm balling. I'm like, bro, I got some tickets to go watch these fights, you know? And then, you know, and it'd be cool if I could say, oh, and by the way, they're going to sit us behind the ring card
girls.
Right,
exactly.
So we're going to chat with the ring card girls while we're there. So, no, it was great, you know, and they were fun, so we were chatting with them. But looking around the crowd, like, there were so many – like, Shelby was over to the left. You know, I saw – at the end of the night, I saw Patchy Mix, and he was there with Tatiana.
Right.
Din Thomas was there. There was, like, just looking around, there was all kinds of people. And then on top of that – so it was cool pointing out to an MMA fan, like, the people that they don't normally see in person, but – in close, like, proximity, then had great fights, you know. So it was just like, dude, this is fun. Like,
so
the fight showed up.
Yep.
Somebody tried that first tour to tell me, and they're like, they were so-so. I was like, bro, I had fun.
They
I was like,
solid.
maybe because I had drank and they hadn't drank, but I was like, dude, I thought the fights were good.
Whole lot of finishes.
Yeah.
The decisions were competitive and exciting.
What you're trying to tell me, they said that the amateur fights were better than the pro fights.
There were some good amateur fights, I'll admit, but no.
The last two fights were solid. Like, it was good, you know. But it was interesting, too, since we are on the side where – so once the pros started going, like, Ray Cooper's brother you know, he lost a tough fight, but I'm looking off to the side, and there's Ray Sefo there, and then Ray Cooper. So I'm just, and I'm telling him, I was like, dude, I was like, that's Ray Sefo, you know, president of like the PFL, and he, you know, is at Extreme. He's a former kickbox champ, blah 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 blah. And I was like, oh shit, dude, next to him, because I didn't really put two and two together, the name of the thing. I was like, that's Ray Cooper right there. I was like, you know, he's a former champ, da 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 da. And then I was like, wait a second, he kind of looked, I saw that the guy fighting was Hawaiian or whatever, and he looked kind of like, and I looked back, I picked the fight card back up, saw the last name Cooper. I was like, holy shit, that's the his little brother.
Yeah.
And so then it really put it into perspective.
And by the way, Makoa Cooper is 2-2 now as a pro. That dude is way better than 2-2 would indicate. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I mean, that was a hell of a fight.
Hell of a fight.
I mean, like, it was
Ray Waters. Ray Waters is undefeated talent.
That was, I mean, I give his opponent all the credit in that fight, but I give Cooper, like,
Cooper's
so
good.
Much heart.
He's
talent,
better than
man.
2-2 would indicate. Yeah. Man, he's got like his head movement. His striking really.
Just
good.
Even after that performance, even seeing that performance in a loss, knowing like Shelby's there, like I don't see why that cat wouldn't get a call to be like on Contenders or to like do something at some point.
Yeah, down the road.
He was solid, but no, it was great. It was fun. And then I know after I was chatting with you and Justin, and then as we saw, there was like even a fight out in the crowd. I think that was that amongst fighters?
I think it might have been.
I think it was.
I think it might have been like the main event or I don't know what happened. I didn't get to see all of it either.
It could be that main event because like the fans were getting pretty heated on that particular one. But dude, it was great, man. It was funny because I know when we initially talked about it, you thought it was going to be in a bigger venue. And
well, I thought it was going to be in the theater because that's where it had been, was the theater. Instead, it was in a ballroom, which we hadn't been in a ballroom in a while.
Which is what, like, I remember, seeing some of the Tough Enough, which is, it's kind of cool in its own, you know, unique little way. I mean, there's something that just so, you want to feel like a grassroots sort of, like, down and dirty fight. Like, it was perfect. But I loved it, man. I loved it. I had such a good time that night.
It's fun, man. I mean, obviously, I've been working with Tough Enough since I moved to Las Vegas. So, I mean, that's, you know, going on 16 years now. So, I got a lot of love for those guys. I do a lot more work for CFFC just because CFFC does so many more shows. But I got love for Tough Enough. But I will say, man, if you're ever in Las Vegas during a Tough Enough show and you can't go, you absolutely should, because of exactly what you said. You know what I mean? Like, there's so much talent in the cage, and it's fun, and they put on a good show. They've been doing this for, you know, over two decades. They did kickboxing and stuff before MMA, and so they put on a great show. But the number of people that you see, like, if you're an MMA fan, like, the number of people you're going to get to rub shoulders with, you know what I mean, and just take a quick picture with or say hi or whatever, and it's just so much less – not stressful, but I guess hectic than like a UFC event. You know what I mean? Where so, and obviously the cost is, you know, not even remotely close. So I'm spoiled in that I work for those two organizations because they both do things top notch. But you know, as much as I'm recommending, just supporting local MMA, man. If you get a chance wherever you are, whether it be Las Vegas or not, you know, to go support an organization in your area, man, it's first of all, your dollar is going to stretch a whole lot further, you know what I mean? Plus, it's just a different experience, man. It's fun. If you've never done it, it's fun. I mean, you're going to be able to sit way closer than you ever would at a USC event without paying, you know, inordinate amounts of money. You know, and people need it. That's the grassroots. That's where the talent comes from, you know what I mean? So I'm glad you had fun and got to have a good time doing it.
And it's funny, and you're going to laugh when I say this. If you ever want to feel like you're at an Apex show, go to a regional
show. Wow. There was probably more people in the ballroom than there was in the Apex.
Well, because they're actually trying to sell tickets. Like, the Apex is like
$1,500.
Yeah.
I just don't get I don't understand the overall thing. At some point, they got to just open it up to more people, right?
I mean, at that point, I mean, even when you go – we've said this before, like when it's like the actual venues and stuff, they're actually using that money for the cost of the actually putting on the event.
Right.
There is no cost at this point for like the Apex. The security's all staff. You know, maybe they bring on a few extra security on, you know, at some point, but for the most part, that's all staff. You know, maybe the people running some of the concessions are extra little people, but for the most part, there's no overhead. So like,
other than just the food they have to bring in for the VIPs, that's it.
I would think that if they really needed the money, they probably could, but on the flip side, you look at some of the ticket pricing for floor access at UFC fights. It's probably about $1,500 or same. So it's probably like they're pricing it the exact same. They see a floor at T-Mobile like the same as like the floor in the Apex.
Right.
You know, because you're just as close, you know, if not maybe even closer at the Apex. But
yeah, probably closer.
But no, I say that just in tongue in cheek because I saw like some other, well, people are always shitting on the Apex.
I mean, which we've always said, we don't, I mean, a lot of it is just the convenience for us. We're like, I don't hate the Apex,
no,
you know what I mean?
I
it's
don't.
Right down the street from my house. It's super convenient.
I don't. You know, and you get people, and I think Ariel, you know, bless his heart the other day, and this could be an old video. Somebody was putting, he was putting something out, and he was like, why didn't some of these media, just people ask Dana, why are we still doing these Apex shows? You know, like, we already know why. They're still doing it,
yeah,
you know?
Like,
you know, I know that everybody wants them to go on the road, but it's like once they established it, you know, like it just –
it's so
never
much
gonna
easier
go
for their operations.
Yeah.
It saves a ton of money in travel.
Yeah.
It saves a ton of stress in trying to sell out arenas because, you know,
yeah.
you don't want to go – man, the last thing you want to do is go to a 17,000-seat arena and have like 4,000 tickets sold.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It looks awful for the company. So – and it's difficult for them, man. Look, trust me, as an organization, you know, I see the guys at CFFC. I see the guys at Tough Enough, like the grind to sell tickets, right? I mean,
yeah.
they need that revenue, right? And so it's hard. And so to be doing it like once a month is tough. To be doing it every single week and to be trying to market in different markets around the world, I mean, it's very difficult.
Yeah.
So it's a beautiful setup for them. And there's a reason that other organizations are doing it. They're like, you know, Oscar De La Hoya has been saying, like, hey, man, we want to set up something like the Apex and do what they're doing. There's a reason people are going to that model because it makes a hell of a lot of financial sense.
Yeah, it really, really does. I mean, like, and that being said, would it be cool if the UFC was traveling all the time? Sure, that's great. And do they have the money to travel all the time? Sure. Yes, they do.
Right.
Especially as the valuation keeps going up and going up. And it's like, it makes it harder, I think, for them to justify never, ever breaking. And I don't, again, not, I wouldn't say breaking away because I don't think it's ever fully going to go away. But could they travel 3 weeks out of the month? Sure. Could they be traveling 2 months out of the month? For sure.
Yeah.
100%. You know, like you said, there's going to be some differences of getting the venues. It's just a lot more juggling, a lot more, you know, planning the schedule out in advance. And I think that's where it gets hard for them sometimes because I don't think they know what the schedule is in full advance. So once you start booking places and actually getting them locked down, and then you have to start advertising. But if you don't really know what the card is, I think it's hard for them to really go full in because they just don't have that fully fleshed out or
right.
whatever. But yeah, I mean, they make enough money to be out there traveling as much. At the end of the day, I do like that they're still here because, you know, it's super easy.
Easy
and
enough.
Honestly, from my view, when I'm stuck in the back room, it
doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter anyways.
It's a spacious media room.
Yeah. I mean, if the fighters don't mind, I get it. But fighters are going to say they don't mind just because they're happy. They're fighting. They're making money.
Their check still comes in either way.
Yeah. I mean, would every fighter like to be fighting in front of fans and a lot of people? Sure. You know, there is something to it. But, you know, also we've seen times, you know, just even fight week logistics, coming and making sure you have the facilities to be able to make weight. You know, a lot of times when they're on the road, that the hotels that they're staying at don't have the proper saunas. They don't have the proper shit. UFC's trying to bring these little portable saunas
right.
so they could stick in the room so they could do shit. It's great to say, hey, yes, we're traveling everywhere. But, you know, say we just for the ease or the point of saying yes, okay, well, we're traveling this weekend, but then you pick a location and go, and then shit just goes wrong, and then what? Now the fighters, you know, the fighters start falling out just because we said we wanted to go on the road, just to
right.
go on the road.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, there's definitely pros and cons both ways. I'll always sort of be a homer for the 5 minute down the street trip where I don't have to pack up, where I don't have to go. Traveling's fun, and that's great and all. If that would mean more media gets to go out and cover them and actually go to events, then I think that's a benefit as well. If people can't travel to Vegas and that's making it to where people can't do the coverage that they want to do because it never gets on the road, then I understand that. I can understand their frustration. But they don't say that.
Yeah.
They say that they're upset because they don't see the fans
well,
in the crowd and they don't do the other stuff.
They're in Atlantic City this weekend. It sure didn't sound like there were a whole lot of people in
yeah,
that media room.
I think there was like five
yeah.
or six people in the media room, you know. So I'm thinking, like, East Coast guys, if they're saying, like, hey, they're not getting to travel, I'm like, here's your East Coast show.
The thing you have to understand, and trust me, I get it. Like, as being somebody that does get to sit cage side in a packed
yeah.
arena and feel the roar of the crowd and feel those special events, like, I get it. There is absolutely something to be said for those iconic moments in front of this amazing crowd and everybody's
yeah.
going nuts and, like, oh, just, you know, it gives you chills. 100%.
Yeah.
But you do have to remember, too, that – it's like if somebody went to your job and be like, hey, you know what, man? I know that you found the most profitable way to do things, but I don't like it.
Yeah.
And so what I would like for you to do is I would like for you to change something. It's going to cost you more money. You're going to lose money. You're not going to be as profitable.
Yeah.
But but it would make me feel better about what you're doing.
Yeah.
Come on, man. You got to understand. Look, at the end of the day, they're not a charity. It's a for-profit company. You know what I mean? And this is the most profitable. And by holding shows at the Apex, then they get things like this week in Atlantic City where they work with the tourism committee who says, hey, you know what? We'd love for you to come here because we're trying to showcase, you know, our venue and showcase our town. And can we give you a little bit of money to help make that work? And, you know, that's how it works.
Yeah. And I guess with that, I mean, like, that helps put on the event. Is that lining the pocket to the fighters? No. And is the fact that they're doing more shows at the Apex changing the pay structure? Not really either. And I can see where people are like, well, if you're going to save money, like, give us some positives that we could say. Like, if the Apex said – if the UFC said, hey, if we're able to put on 20 Apex shows, we can guarantee a 2% increase on the fight purses or whatever. That's never, ever going to get done or whatever. You know, I think people would – bitch about it less if they could say, okay, well, fighters are benefiting from it or
whatever.
Well,
you just wait till this lawsuit is all said and done. And I bet – oh, wait. Oh.
Well, you know, yeah, that's a whole can of worms. But, you know, and we talked about it again. It's the best of what is. And that's the kind of thing, like, you wonder if that's the kind of – but that I don't think that would ever – if even if they tried to say, hey, can you put in the contracts that we have to fight on the road? It has to be an event. It has to be an arena. It would never fly.
Oh, that would never happen.
It would never fly.
No, you're never going to be able to say we get to dictate where you are hosting events.
Least say, like, it can't be at your headquarters. You know, like, if we're going to fight, we want to fight for people. You know, if we're going to gladiate in front of crowds.
Yeah, we'll see about that. Hey, look, collective bargaining, if they ever want to come together. But I at this point in my career, I've lost all hope of that.
When do you think we're going to find out more details of what was actually in the agreement?
They said within 30 to 45 days, I believe, everything had to be
so
filed.
So obviously this will be from the plaintiff's side. I feel like the UFC is going to stay as mum as they possibly can.
Oh, they'll never say anything, yeah.
Like, they had that generic little statement, and Dana still never went out and said anything about it. You know, like, I haven't heard Hunter. I haven't heard anybody that's, like, a main position verbally say, this is our thoughts on the outcome of this lawsuit, which is just strange to me.
And the truth is, so Dana didn't come to the post-fight press conference, as you know. You were there with me this past week after Rose Namajunas' win over Amanda Ribas. Basically, at that point, by the end of the night, all we had was Rose, right? Because they brought back Carl Williams to you guys during the main event. So we just spoke to her. We didn't speak to Dana. I have seen a lot of podcasts this week with Dana doing things, but I haven't watched most of them. But most of them are, like, taped and stuff,
I saw
right?
a weird one. Like, I don't know. Our Slack channel sort of chatting about something. Like, she was on a podcast with this woman. I don't know it. And I think maybe she called him Joe.
Joe Rogan. Yeah, I saw the clip. Yeah, at the end, she's like, what's Joe Rogan's dream? And he started messing with her. He's like, I just did a 2-hour podcast and you thought I was Joe Rogan the whole time. I think she just misspoke briefly in that moment. But yeah, he held her to it. He was like, yeah, I flew out here and did a 2-hour podcast and you thought I was Joe Rogan the whole time.
She's like, if I knew it was just you, I was wondering when you were gonna start telling jokes. I thought you'd be funnier, motherfucker.
So I haven't watched a lot of those yet.
So what's it like eating bugs, Dana?
Damn, that's a throwback right there, bro.
It's like eating bugs, Joe.
Man. He's like, I didn't do that. So I mean, the next time we'll see him, they're in Atlantic City. I don't know if he made the trip out there or not. I guess if the media is there, they'll get the chance to ask him. And I'm sure he'll be asked. But, you know, I mean, we've seen Dana, you know, I mean, we've asked Dana about this lawsuit over the course of the 10 years, right? And what does he say? Like, I don't worry about that. I don't think about
lawyers.
To handle that. And that is true, right? Like, he just – like, at this point, he's like, just let me handle the fight stuff. Like, you guys can do all that, you know. What about the drug thing? Don't know. That's why I hired Jeff Nowitzki. He does all that. Yeah. I don't mess with it, you know.
But now that the lawsuit's done, I feel like as the CEO, he should be able to make a statement. Not through a proxy, just make a statement. Like, you are the chief executive officer. That's, like, what the CEOs do. Like, if there's ever a class action, or if there's ever any major movement or anything about your organization, somebody, if it's not going to be Dana, then it's got to be somebody. Somebody should physically actually say something. I mean, if he can get on, dude comes on and does Fuck It Fridays. You can't come on and say, hey, you know, we're glad that the parties involved came to an agreement. You know, all parties maybe aren't as happy as they want, but hey, you know, an agreement was reached. We're glad that we can move on forward and constructively and, you know, with the fighters and everybody's happy and, well, maybe not everybody's happy, but at least act like you're an actual CEO. Say something about it, you know, like, and let
it was actually a pretty decent statement there, bro. You've actually gotten pretty good at corporate
but
speak
hey,
right there.
Fuck it. It's Friday at the very end. I mean, it's just strange. I mean, like, I'm not asking him to give me the fine details because I know he'll never have that stuff.
Yeah.
But it would just be good to actually hear something from a representative of the company, because, like, So when he didn't come the other day, I wanted to ask Lene, like, so has the UFC given us an official statement? Can we just have something that we can put on the thing? And then when the team said that, you know, somebody came out with that official sort of like generic statement right after it initially
Right.
happened. And I was like, so if you know that there was the potential that your company could have been on the hook for $1 billion or close to it or even more, you think that the company would have like a, you know, like an actual statement or thought on that, you know, issue. And still at this point, your company's having to give payout 335, was it
Yeah,
335
yeah.
million dollars, and you don't think you should go on record to say something about it? Like, that's not, maybe they're like, it's barely 2% of our net worth, you
Yeah,
know.
yeah,
But it's like, it just figures that, you know, if you want to seem like you're a company on the up, your CEO should say something about that sort of stuff, whether it's pretty or not. I don't think anybody would say, well, Dana, what does this mean per fighter? What is this? Because then he could say, guys, read the thing coming out and just give a blank statement, you know, or something. Or even if just Lene or somebody came out and said, here, guys, this is what's happened. Then I feel like until that point happens, somebody's going to keep trying to ask.
Yep.
Like, just get ahead of it and just come out once, say something. I mean, it's just crazy. I feel like we've gotten statements for stuff that were a lot less important to the operations of how that company runs. So you think that when finally a class action suit that's been going on for 10 plus
10
years
years.
is finally done, you'd say something about it? I
Yeah.
mean, it makes you, it begs you to differ, to ask, like, do you know it's done? Like, do you really know it's done yet? Because you haven't said anything
That'd be
about it.
amazing. He's like, oh, is that thing? Hold
Is
on. Let
that
me.
actually.
Let me. Hunter, is that thing done? It is.
Has anybody, have we said anything about it?
Hang on. One sec. Where's Eric? Eric, come here.
Is it done?
Is this done? It is.
Oh, that would be.
Would
well,
that not be great?
if there's a way to play it off, that would be the way to play it
Would
off.
that not be
That'd be
great?
the way to play it off.
Is this done? Well, there you go, guys. It's done.
That'd be a statement. There you go. And just with that little smirky smile. There you go.
Have we spent some time around Dana White or what, man?
Yeah.
You could just lay it out there. You can see it happening. You're right. I actually, what you said, I think is spot on. I would love to hear a statement and just, you know, a mending of the fences or something. You know what I mean? Of like,
I think that's
hey, man,
that's
you
the
know,
best part right
we're
there.
glad to put this behind us. We want
Yeah.
our fighters to know that, you know, we're, you know, and look, we've all said increased wage share would be nice. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It'd be nice as revenue continues to grow. And look, wages have risen, but have they risen in an equal level with, you know, the company revenue? And don't
Yeah.
forget, I think people do forget sometimes the massive amounts of overhead that the
Yeah.
UFC does have. There are a ton of expenditures when you talk about all the staff that they employ,
Yeah.
when you talk about all the travel expenses, when you talk about, so I do think, unfortunately, sometimes people go, only 18% goes to the fighters and 82% goes to Dana's pockets. You know, it's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. No,
Yeah.
no, no. There's a lot of expenditures in there. But, you know, I think we all agree that you know, wages should continue to rise as the revenue continues to rise and the profits continue. But it would be nice to come out and just make a statement. And I guess that's the thing, is you have to be careful what you say in the statement or whatever. But it
Yeah.
would be nice to just be like, hey, we're glad to have this behind us. You know, we're working with the fighters. You know, we're continuing to build this brand. We're continuing to build this sport, and the fighters are a, you know, a massive part of what we do. And
Yeah.
it, you know, wouldn't happen without them. And we're, you know, something along the
That's why
lines of what
maybe
you laid
even it's
out.
like Hunter or Lawrence. If Dana can't stick to the line and can't give the like the bullet points, give it to somebody that can.
Yeah.
Like Hunter or Lawrence. Somebody
Lawrence would be
that
really.
I
Lawrence
think
has done a
Lawrence
lot. Lawrence is probably the best.
I think Lawrence would be
Lawrence SD,
super
for anybody that
solid.
doesn't know,
Yeah.
he's done a lot. He's done a lot. He did some speaking. I remember Brazil. Like, he represented the brand a couple times down in
Yeah.
Brazil. I think when they didn't have a regional officer
Yeah.
down there. Hunter strikes me as the kind of guy that likes to stick it to people. You know.
Yeah, but I think when it comes to numbers and the understanding, like he has a huge grasp. Like,
Oh yeah.
I feel like if Lawrence, when the people are gathering it, like Hunter's going to be one of the resources that's going to be
I
doing
mean,
it.
Hunter's who we all believe will take over Dana when Dana does finally
Yeah,
step aside.
100%,
Yeah.
100%. But I mean, it would just feel better if something just official. But I do like the idea of the mending fences. I mean, like, will it actually change? You know, or are people actually happier, you know, or, you know, did they actually mend any fences? I mean, like, it's not like both sides, it wasn't like anybody really sort of just touted the thing. Like, nobody's patting each other on the back. In fact, like, one of the statements or somebody came out and said, I think it was Nate or
Nick
somebody,
Quarry's.
Nate Quarry, was like, you know, like, we're not patting ourselves on the back. They stated the reasons why, and I'm sure that things could have been better, but it would be nice to think that they at least were able to – did they shake at the end of it? Did anybody, like, sort of say, hey, you know, something? Or – and even if not, maybe that's just wishful thinking that, you know, we hope that at the end of all this that they could at least look each other in the face and understand why both sides did what they did. It's certainly like, and I know we talked about last time, it definitely feels like it came out in the UFC's favor, what it could have been.
Yeah. Again, like we did say, wait till we see the final. We still got to see the final settlement, and it does still have to be approved and all those things.
Yeah.
We know about the financial part of it. We don't know if there were any contractual changes or any other
things. And I think that's the part where more, you know, like we have the ballpark about the numbers. Like the numbers are out there.
Yep.
It's the everything else, you know, like, and I think you mentioned it last week, and others have sort of said, like, if anything, now we think that the UFC shored up their side of the legalities of loopholes that maybe have been, like, that's probably shored up. And is that for the better of the company? Sure. But is it for the better of the fighters? Probably not, you know. So, but it'd be interesting to see those things. But going back to just the fact that this huge thing is done, and it would just be nice to hear from the company, just sort of put it, not, I don't want to say put it to bed, but at least be able to walk back and say, okay, well, we did have a statement, because then they can at least say, well, guys, we've released a statement already. We already talked about this, you know, like, let me point you to this, you know, or something. Shoot, if they had like a UFC.com, they could probably even just put a statement on there and maybe have a pre-tape thing. If they had people in their company that could actually film like Dana in a studio, and then they could just probably release it.
Would they have the abilities to do that, though?
I don't know.
You're right, maybe. But they could. I mean,
They used to do that stuff all the time. Yep. Like, you know, they'd have Dana sit down and do little stuff like that. I mean, they have the means to do it. They just, for some reason, are choosing not to. You know, I know they have a lot of things in the fire going. You got Power Slap. You got Nitro Cross. You got this. You got this. You would just think that the people that are actually running the organization said, "Hey, all right, this is done. Have we done our due diligence to sort of put it to bed and say anything?" And I just feel like they haven't.
I guess there's just the, you know, I mean, what does a lawyer tell you immediately? Like, don't talk about anything. Don't say anything, right? Because all you can do is, like, make it worse. You know what I mean?
That's usually, like, when it's pending, though.
Well,
right?
I know, but I'm just saying, like, maybe they're like, hey, man, just let it go. Like, everything's already been in court. I don't.
Yeah.
Maybe once the final settlement's in, maybe once the final paperwork's all been filed and approved, maybe that's what they're waiting on. Again, there's the optimist in me. I'm always the eternal optimist. So maybe that's what I tell you. What's gonna be interesting too is, and we touched on it a little bit last week as well, but man, I've been having more conversations with people about it in the week since, is how they figure out how to divvy up all this money.
Yeah.
Because there's a real possibility, and I've heard a number of people say that they think it'll – because I've said from the beginning, I think the fair way is to take the total number of bouts that you had in that class agreement, divide it up, and everybody gets equal shares per, right? But I've heard a lot of people saying no. They think what they're probably going to do is – it's going to be, you know, decided by how much revenue you were paid, like what your income was during that, and then you get like a wage share according to that. And if that's the case, you're going to have people like Ronda Rousey, Brock Lesnar, Conor McGregor, like, get substantial shares of that money, which is like they're in zero need of it whatsoever.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's going to be kind of if that's the way it goes down, like, that's going to feel like even more of like, what?
Yeah.
Like, the
was
rich
that
got
you
richer?
That was talking about Chael Sonnen? Like, I thought it was so. You or somebody that said, you know, like, depending on how it pans out, Chael, even though he was willing to testify sort of on the UFC side, might get one of the largest, like, portions of the payout. And it's like, huh.
It's crazy.
I thought that was you that said that. And somebody else, maybe somebody else that told me that. But again, like, until we understand how the pay thing, but if they did do something along those lines, when this time period was happening, the people that were popping, making the money, like, Chael certainly was up
there. He was up there during that stretch, yeah. That'd be
crazy,
man. Good Lord. All right, listen, we've had a little bit of work, even though we didn't work in Atlantic City. You and I did hit up a PFL media day yesterday at Extreme Couture. Sadabusi, Mads Burnell, Alex Polizzi, Marcella Nunes, Bubba Jenkins, and Kai Kamaka were all there. We're supposed to speak to Ray Cepho, but I think he had something come up and he had to depart. And there was a schedule conflict with Randy Couture that we were supposed to get him as well. I was actually interested in asking Randy Couture his thoughts.
Did
on
you
the
never
settlement.
End up getting him?
No, he was. By the time we left, he still wasn't there yet.
Because
so.
I was going to try to stick around.
I know you had to bounce early because you had your blood drive appointment that you had to go to.
Well,
but
I'm glad then.
We didn't end up getting him. I did want to ask him his thoughts on. I always feel like sometimes, you know, like, there's like kind of baiting people to ask about stuff. Like, I mean, you know, this thing's been going on a decade. Do you need to ask Randy about it all the time? But I thought Randy, because of his conflicts that he's had with the UFC, and, you know, he had some wage arguments. I thought his opinion on, you know, would have been valuable.
100%.
So I did want to ask him about that, but we didn't get a chance to. But we talked to the fighters. I guess to me, probably the, I wouldn't say the most significant, but I mean, yeah, I guess kind of. I mean, Sadabu C moving from 170 to 205. You know, they don't have a middleweight division, right? So he can't go to middleweight, which is really, really – so he was a natural middleweight who forced himself down to 170 because there was no middleweight, then decided, like, I can't make this anymore. And we saw it, man. His cuts were getting really, really bad.
Yeah.
And he's like, so I'm going to move up, but I can't move up to 185. So he's moving up to 205 right away, which is a huge – but, gosh, I mean, you could just – he just looks healthier.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not quite fight week yet, but he used to look rough on fight week.
Yeah, and to say, like, you know, at some of those points he was cutting like 40 pounds.
That's insane.
That is ridiculous. And to do that repeated times in a year, like, that's bonkers.
Crazy, man.
That's bonkers.
So he is going to debut on April 12th, which is the show that's here in Las Vegas. His first fight at light heavyweight will be against Josh Silvera. Now, of course, everybody knows the PFL season. It's a regular season. So, you know, that result doesn't necessarily dictate his whole season. I did, to be honest with you, I was a little surprised with that matchmaking. It seems like two of their
stars.
Their guys. Yeah,
yeah,
two of their
guys.
Stars.
Yeah.
You know, their guy.
And yikes.
So I was a little bit surprised that they matched them up together. But I will say Sadabu had a great answer in terms of the matchup. He's like, you know what? I like this matchup, and let me tell you why. Because when I win this fight, it's going to prove – you know, that I am a legitimate light heavyweight, that I do deserve to be in this division. You know, this is going to show you my level. He's like, if I would have gotten maybe one of the lesser names, one of the newcomers, one of the more unproven commodities, and I win, he's like, then maybe at that point, you guys still question, okay, well, we got that win, but where does he really stand? He's like, I'm going to be able to prove it right away. So I thought that was great.
That's a good point. But yeah, I like Sadabu, and I think – I mean, how do you not like Silvera as well? I mean, like, his dad's, like, super, super, like, tight. Every time I see his dad, he, like, gives me a hug, and I'm just like, I don't want to see his son get in a fight or, like, lose or whatever. But, I mean, yeah, I mean, there's two guys that the sport – they're at least that PFL can build around. You always hate when they sort of, like, you know, pair up, but it happens. You know, we see it happen in the sport way too often, and it's – you know, it's unfortunate. But, man, that's going to be a fun one. That's going to be a fun one.
I like
one.
That. I like
Silvera,
that.
I mean, he's – I felt like we knew that he was going to be getting better and better. I feel like we're watching him sort of become, like, come into his own more so. Sadabu's been, I feel like, has been crushing it from the get-go, you know?
Yep.
Like, that dude's just legit, man. So, I mean, that'd be tough. That's going to be a tough match for both sides, man. I don't know where I lean on that one, but, yeah, that's going to be a hard one to watch.
It's going to be an interesting week, man. Yeah. So that fight card, Phil Davis versus Rob Wilkinson, Impa Kasanganai versus Alex Polizzi, who Polizzi was another one that was like, good Lord, they're giving me the
– he had a lot of energy at the –
Polizzi's a funny dude, man.
He's a character.
If you haven't been around Alex Polizzi before, he is a funny dude.
I enjoyed that. He was a character, man.
He's got some energy. He was having some fun talking about his time working with Sean Strickland. And it was fun. So what was it? Alex Buchanan asked him, like
– what was the best was life? Like
life advice, yeah. He was
advice.
Like, no.
He's like, I'm gonna keep it to fighting.
We're gonna keep it to fight advice. We're not talking about life advice that he is giving me. I'm like, you know what? That's probably smart.
Yes.
That is probably smart in there. So, but yeah, that's a good card. What is it? I almost said December 12th. April 12th. Good Lord, December 12th.
That little April stretch.
April 12th. Yeah. So that'd be the same week as UFC 300. Yep. J.J. Wilson's on there against Adam Piccolotti. I like that fight. That's a Bellator matchup there. Marcelo Nunes is in there. He was there. We spoke to him as well. Solomon Renfro's on the card. He's got another tough matchup. So, a fun card. I will not be at that event because I will be at CFFC 131, which is in Atlantic City, actually, where the UFC is this week. So, I will be flying back and forth during UFC 300 week. So, I won't be at that. It is going to be interesting because I'm sure, and we don't know, we didn't talk to anybody with operations at PFL, but you just know it wasn't an accident that they ended up in Las Vegas the night before UFC 300. But, man, it makes it a little more challenging, I think, than maybe they might have originally anticipated, right? Because there's just so much other stuff going on that the media, I mean, there's so many things to do already that it's going to be really interesting to see how much coverage they do get, because I'm sure they thought, hey, man, we can get some extra coverage. We'll be in the same town where all this media is traveling to, and, you know, maybe they'll roll in. But, you know, I think their media day is going to be on the same day as USC media day. Their weigh-ins are going to be the same day as the USC press conference. Their fights, while they're on Friday night, as, you know, you and I well know, man, if you get up and do official weigh-ins and then you go to ceremonial weigh-ins and maybe there's a Q&A or something like that in between, and then to try to go work a full night of fight coverage there as well is tough. And it is going to be interesting, too, because there is a Power Slap event that night, and it's going to be interesting to see who goes to Power Slap, who goes to PFL. And
I can tell you who's not going to be at Power Slap.
That'd be you.
This guy. I doubt I'll be at the Power.
I think you were saying you probably won't be at PFL either,
won't
though,
be at
right?
PFL either. If I did, if I had to go,
it's
if
a
I
long
did go to
day,
work,
man.
it's just such a long day. I mean, like, you know, starting, I'll leave my house at 7:30, you know, and then by the time we get done with the ceremonial weigh-ins, which will be roughly 5:36.
Yeah, usually 5:30. Well, yeah, by the time you get done processing the video, because
they're
usually
down
done
there,
by
you
about
know,
4:35,
like,
you know, and then.
And then if I wanted to actually drive, you know. You know, if I was going to go to PFL, I would probably stay over in that general area. But then I'm going to have all my gear, and I hate leaving my gear in my car. So I'd want to – well, I guess I'd have to take them if I was going to PFL. It's just a long day. I don't know. It'll be a judgment call that day, but I'm not leaning that I'm going.
What if they were like, hey, man, we know you're not working. Just come grab a ticket and come watch some fights.
You know me, once I got home –
it would depend whether or not you got home first.
You know, because I would take my gear out of my car, and I'm like, driving back down to the strip area. I'm like, no.
Well, I would recommend everybody go with the two TV setup that night.
Yeah.
I mean, definitely you want to watch the
PFL. I will
PFL.
Watch it on TV, though.
Watch it on there. But also, of course, make sure that you have USC Fight Pass pulled up as well, so you're watching CFFC 131. We've got a fantastic card that we'll talk about as we get closer, but we got a loaded lineup in Atlantic City. My man CM Punk will be there, so looking forward to working with him again as always. I would have been, you know, actually, is it this weekend or next weekend? I think it's next weekend. Because it's like WrestleMania weekend or whatever. It's in Philadelphia. I would have been there, but he's hurt, so he's not wrestling. But I would have gone to that. It would have been my first WrestleMania ever. But you know what? There's a rumor that it may be in Las Vegas next year.
Whoa.
Yeah, so I might attend my first my first WrestleMania ever if it's in
Look
Las Vegas.
That.
It'd be fun. Yeah, we've actually got a grappling event next week. And I think because it's WrestleMania weekend, Punk had to bow out of that. And isn't able to work the grappling event that we're doing. But I will actually be working with Colton Smith. If you remember Colton Smith, man, I hadn't seen him in forever. He was the Ultimate Fighter 16 winner. His run in the UFC is ridiculous. He went 0-3 in the UFC after winning the Ultimate Fighter. But listen to who he fought. Robert Whittaker, Michael Chiesa, and Diego Fajeda. That was the three people he fought, and he went 0-3 against, and that was his UFC career done. I mean, like, come on, man. And then he wins four so he goes out of the UFC, wins four fights outside of the organization, and then gets a fight on the regional scene in Florida with Sean Brady. He lost to Sean Brady on the regional scene as well. And so it's like my man cannot catch a break whatsoever. So I haven't seen him in a while. Obviously, it was a long time ago, but he covered his Ultimate Fighter run. So I'm looking forward to working with him. That'll be next week in Georgia. So
you're all over the place.
Trying to stay busy. All right, the UFC is in Atlantic City this week. I mentioned I'll be in Atlantic City next 2 weeks, whatever it is. I'll figure it out. but it reminded me of – I was thinking about Atlantic City. My memories had kind of come to – like kind of all rolled together, I think. I was at the last Atlantic City event, which was in 2018. It was at the same venue, Boardwalk Hall. That night was Kevin Lee defeating Edson Barbosa in the main event. Frankie Edgar beat Cub Swanson in the co-main event. Gosh, there were some great names in that card. Aljamain Sterling was on there, got a win over Brett Johns. Dan Hooker beat Jim Miller. That was a very, very, very controversial submission win for Ricky Simone over at Marab Dvalishvili. Corey Anderson was on the card as well. Anthony Rocco Martin for a little trip down memory lane. But I remembered that event because I remembered there were like 8 fights in the crowd that night. Like the drunk Jersey crew was throwing down, and I remember like it was funny because
imagine that
on a Saturday night, hammered at Boardwalk Hall. There were a bunch of fights in the crowd, and I remember there were like 8 fights. And the most technical fight of the night was two girls that were just throwing hands, but they were like, I mean, they were throwing like combinations and
few haters out there that don't like women's
MMA. Oh, it was 90s, boy. They were scrapping in the stands, bro. They were throwing hands. So I remember that. But in my head, I thought that I went straight from that event to Dublin, Ireland, but that was actually a 2014 event where I went from there to straight to Dublin for the Conor McGregor versus Diego Brandão fight in Dublin. Remember, Matt Erickson was actually covering that one because at the time his mom lived in London, England, so he was using that as a chance to go, like, you know, get halfway there or more than halfway there, get all the way there on the company dime, and then go make a quick diversion over to London and see his mom. So I actually paid my own way to go over there for that, obviously, epic historical night. Conor
McGregor.
Did you
get in trouble for doing that?
Did I get? No.
You see what you did there?
This was well before those people started coming around talking shit. At that point, I could do whatever I wanted to do. So anyway, those for whatever reason, those memories, those were actually two different events. So they're in Atlantic City this week. Always a fun place to be. This card, as far as what's on it, man, I mean, I'm most dialed into the main event. Of course, I know I was watching Nolan King. I was watching the media that you guys were turning out today.
The King himself.
The King himself is in there getting a chance to talk to. I think he had 8 fighters today. I think the most meaningful fight on the card is the main event, and I'm intrigued by it, man. I really am. I'm obviously going to be biased. I've got some CFFC bias for Erin Blanchfield. I called grappling with her, a couple months ago, and it was the first time I'd really gotten to be around her outside of just like fight week, and like she is so just like dialed in, like cold blooded, like that is who she is, man. She is all business, you know
100%.
What I mean. And but I like this matchup a lot. This is tough because Manon Fiorot, like we've been, I mean, at least me personally, I think you've kind of been with me on that bandwagon of being kind of high on her abilities and her skills and her talent level as a future title contender. And it feels like, honestly, it could still be that both these women will fight for a title at some point in their career. But it seems like whoever wins is next. Because I don't think, you know, I kind of touched on it last week with Rose Namajunas. And I probably wasn't clear enough in the way I worded the question, but, like, you know, she has name value. Like, she didn't necessarily have the greatest performance the other night. It was a good performance. It wasn't a great performance. And she named out, hey, maybe a rematch with Manon. She mentioned maybe Macy Barber. But, you know, Rose Namajunas is a star. She could always be like, or a title shot, you know, because I'm the star and I'm the former champ, et cetera, et cetera. She seemed to not be willing to really push that. So it seems to me that maybe there could have been some confusion over which person would move forward. But it seems to me like the winner of this is potentially getting the winner of the trilogy fight, which we think is going to happen in September at the Sphere between Alexa Grasso and Valentina Shevchenko. Although, if they do win that and they're waiting for that, I mean, then that means the winner here is going to have to wait for like a year.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. I feel like this is a number one contender fight, but maybe not a number one contender fight because do you really want to wait 9 to 12 months before you fight for the title after you win?
Well, they would still be the first ones to fight for it.
I know. Well, so, see, that, and that's the thing,
so
right?
It is still kind of.
It's like if you're guaranteed the shot, and Dana White has said this before, like, I don't like people to wait that haven't been given a shot, right? You know what I mean? Because people are like, oh, I'll hold out because they'll give it to me. But if they're like, hey, you're next, you know what? In much the same way, I know this is different because you're talking about an interim champion already, but like he said with Tom Aspinall, right? Like, Dana has said, look, Tom Aspinall has next for John Jones and Stipe. But if he wants to fight, we'll fight him. We'll find him an opponent. We'll get him. But if he wants to, he can have that winner. I feel like this might be that kind of situation where we'll be like, hey, that's the number one contender if they want to wait. If they don't, we'll find him another fight.
Yeah.
But you always have to remember, it's not good to wait. But when there's a title fight on the line, that's a guaranteed contract change.
Yeah.
That's a guaranteed opportunity that doesn't ever necessarily come along. I mean, I don't want to pick on her because we love her, but like Joanne Wood, right? I mean, she made the decision that everybody applauds. Hey, man, you didn't sit around and wait. You fought.
Yep.
but she lost. Yeah. And then she never got that title shot. And maybe she missed out on a big paycheck because of it. So I don't know. Are you looking at, I mean, how are you looking at this fight? Is the winner going to fight for a title? Is the winner going to fight Rose or somebody else? Like, what are you thinking about this?
I mean, I wouldn't mind the Rose one just because of the fact that it's Rose, and I think that Rose put on a really good performance. I think it would be interesting. I know Rose would like to get into that fight, but just looking at these two particular here, I mean, you're headlining the card. I think if you're going to go out and call out the champ, what better spot, I mean, to be in the headline of a card? I think you carry some extra weight at that point. So if you go out and either one of these girls starches or gets it, like, it just has an incredible performance, I could clearly see them coming out and saying and having them getting
right.
the call. I mean, they're much closer statistically in the numbers. I mean, according to the, I don't know what the
it's number two versus it's number two versus number three.
Yeah, I mean,
so
like that's,
to me
that should be who it is.
This should be it.
Yeah,
this should be a
I
number
mean,
one
this is what people
fight.
Have been arguing about. Like, that's what the whole lawsuit was about and everything. Like, it, they shouldn't, you know, as good as Rose was, she shouldn't be able to jump the line according
right.
to that. So. I think so. I mean, I think this is a good one. This is a tough one. So did you? So I'm thinking, since listening to you, well, I don't know, because you went both ways. I leaned Manon on this one.
Did you really?
I did.
I'm picking Blanchfield, but I'm so hesitant
because of her groundwork.
Because of her ground game. Because of her ground. But have you look, man?
I'm kind of hesitant because I'm kind of almost now I'm becoming a little wishy washy because of that. She is so good. On the ground, it's ridiculous.
She really is, and she's got great takedowns. So Manon Fiorot has, first of all, it's pretty incredible that they're both on 6-fight win streaks. So they're both tied for the longest current win streak in the division, which is pretty cool to see. But I saw a stat. I was looking at this. It was like the UFC preview stats that they send out sometimes. Manon Fiorot's takedown defense is really good. Her takedown defense is 91.7% in the UFC. That's really good, but she hasn't necessarily fought anybody, I think, that has the type of takedown skills that Erin Blanchfield has. I mean, she's fought some good opponents. I mean, the run that she's on right now, I mean, you look at the wins, they're quality names. I mean, Rose, obviously, herself, Caitlin Chookagian, Jennifer Maya, Myra Buena Silva. I mean, those are all very good names, but none of them have, I think, the kind of takedowns that Erin Blanchfield does. So for that reason, I leaned Erin Blanchfield. But like, Manon is like a physical presence, man. She's like she's strong. You know what I mean? She's got a lot of power. So
yeah,
I'm taking Erin Blanchfield. And I think part of it is my bias, my CFFC bias. I think part of it is I do generally tend to find myself favoring the fighter that has the greater ground skills.
Yeah.
But
with good reason.
Yeah, with good reason. But I don't look at this as like this is a lock. You know what I mean? Manon's dangerous.
She really, really is. But man, as for like your question before, should they wait? Or, I mean, it's tough. It's tough to, I mean, because if you wait, then what? Now you're going to be fighting back just to stay active.
Yep.
A year is a long time to wait, but I think you raised a good point where, you know, we've seen people that have been in that spot and they've lost the shot.
Yeah.
You don't want to lose the shot. I'm sure you could find ways to stay active for a year if you know it's guaranteed and you know it's coming. I think if Dana says, hey, they're next, you wait. If he comes out and says, you're next, I think you have to wait.
I think so, too. I think
it's just too risky. It's too risky.
I agree.
I mean,
the only thing I can see is maybe you put yourself in the co-main event of that Sphere card in case somebody falls out.
Well, that would be interesting.
You know?
I mean,
the winner versus Rose or the winner versus Macy in the co-main event.
But neither one of those women's going to miss weight. Like
I know. Yeah. They're not going to miss weight. You're talking about, I think you're thinking about an injury or something, but it's probably not going to happen. So at that point, do you just wait? It's going to be a weird situation.
It's a tough one.
Because
it's a tough one.
There is no more clear. I mean, they both have the longest win streaks in the division. It's number two versus number three.
It's really impressive.
It's really impressive.
There's
no more clear cut number one contender fight than this.
Yeah.
But do you sit around and wait?
Yeah.
Tough one.
But yeah, because then, yeah, I mean, you could sit around and wait and say you injure yourself.
And then you
doing
miss your
something
shot.
Ridiculous.
Yep.
It doesn't even have to be training. It could be anything. Anything could pop up. So, yeah, I mean, like, I mean, we've heard from fighters and people say, you know, if I would have stayed active, I probably would have made more money than sitting out and waiting for the shots that eventually never came, you know? So there is something to that. But, man, with some of these divisions, if you lose and you step back, and then you have to fight 2-3 more times just to get back in that same position. I don't know. That's a tough one. That's a tough one. I think, yeah, I mean, who knows what we'd do if I was putting that same – if you're in
tough
that
spot,
same
man.
Spot, you know.
Tough spot.
It really, really is.
Tough spot.
I think it's going to be a good one. Man, so torn now on my pick. I'm not doing well this year.
I haven't taken a look. Not up at the top.
Bonds got like a nice pad of these up. He's up at like 6 or something.
Oh, wow. Yeah, a quick start out the gates, huh?
Yeah, he jumped out real well. I don't know where it happened and where it came from. I think he must have paid Erickson to pad his numbers a little bit or something. But, you know, this could be one of those ones where here I was like, I might be picking against some of the norm, but these are like the ones you pick up, but then you pick up one of those numbers back. But like I could just be digging myself a further hole. But, man, I am confident that Manon has the skills to actually –
She can absolutely win this fight.
She could definitely win this fight. But, man, if Blanchard just gets it down the ground and doesn't let her up, then the whole fight I'm going to be sitting there yelling at the screen like, you are so stupid. Why did you pick the way you did? Because you know that it's going to get to the ground, and her ground game is so good.
Really good.
It's so good. You don't hear – I mean, like we talk about it, and you hear me to talk about it. You don't hear enough fighters give her the credit for how – impressive she is. I don't know, you know, why it is. Maybe we're not asking them to like rate her. It's just not like she's thrown it in people's faces like, I'm the greatest grappler, I'm the greatest on the ground. If I get you on the ground, I will pound your soul out. You know, like we're not really thinking about it, but dude, she does it. And it's really, really impressive. So, man, I'm like literally talking myself back. I did make my last pennant switch on Rose. Oh no, I was because I put my picks in earlier. Then I swapped to Rose after because we put our picks in before Wednesday at 9 a.m. Like noon Eastern on Wednesday. So before media day starts, our picks are already in. After listening to Rose up on the dais when she was talking to us, and she seemed so confident, I immediately put it in the chat. I was like, yo, swap my vote. I was like, I want Rose. And at the end of the night, a fight night, I was like, you're stud. You're right. So I don't know. Maybe, I don't know. And usually if I wait till – usually you want to see them facing off. You want to see how they look, you know, when it comes to weighing day. At that point, they usually don't like to switch the picks.
Right.
Because I like to hold it to that point and say, all right, let me see Manon and then, you know, Aaron face off. Let's see how they look. But – man,
I mean,
you get me thinking.
Manon's got to be a good 3 or 4 inches taller than her, so she's gonna tower over her. There's no question about it, and she's big.
And it's not like she tires out. She just, you know, like if she's had some problems in the past, you know, like when it's gotten to the ground, am I talking myself out of it? I think she's good enough to do it. But man, I we've been talking about Blanchfield being like a future champ forever.
I love just sitting there, let you sweat. It's kind of funny. I'm watching it.
I'm literally like, should I just message the chat? But you've swayed me before to the wrong side before.
So don't let me.
So I'm not. Yeah, I'm not. I'm gonna try to just hold my guns. I might as well just go down with the ship.
Go down with the ship. You already picked it. Did you? I haven't made a pick on this fight yet. Vicente Luque, Joaquin Buckley.
I went Luque.
You went Luque?
I initially went Buckley, and I was like, why am I discounting Luque?
More well-rounded,
more
experience.
Yep. I mean, I think it was the recency bias. Watching Buckley had like that great fight, the last fight, and I just think that I was like, man, he's coming in. When he is on, man, he is so exciting to watch. When you hear him talk, you're just like, how can anybody lose?
Great.
How can this dude lose to anybody? Like, he's going to walk through everybody. But then it's Luque.
He's great on the mic.
Who's
Buckley's
tough
amazing.
As nails, man. Yeah, Buckley's great on the mic, man. So I lean towards Vicente, but that's another one. Like,
that's what I kind of – in my head, I'm kind of thinking I'm leaning towards Vicente, but I was watching Joaquin's – I was watching him today, and it is. He's just so dynamic, and
he's
think about how –
yeah,
so charismatic. That's the word, man. He's really great, man. And it kind of made me think, like, you know, he's just talking about – man, I've been – you know, I love it. He's like, oh, you thought I took this on short notice? Like, nope, I was already preparing for another fight. You know what I mean? Like, I was getting ready for this and et cetera, et cetera. So,
man, when he's firing on all cylinders, man, that dude is so badass, man. His hands and his moves. I mean, like, who was the spinning knockout on? Spinning.
Impa Kasangana.
Yeah. Like, how can anybody forget that one? That was, like, vicious. It was like, holy cow. You know, like
that was amazing.
Do I think he's going to get it on this one? No, but will he attempt it? He sure will.
He'll try it, man.
He sure will.
That
but
dude's dangerous.
I think if Luke, I envision Luke just gets him to the ground. You know, once he gets him to the ground, I don't think he's going to get back up unless the round stops.
Probably took Bruno Silva over Chris Weidman.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And that's no slight on Weidman. Weidman's just not the same. His I mean, one, he dealt with a serious injury, and just coming back, he just hasn't been the same. That's time. He's just getting older. I mean, the sport keeps moving, and I think just Silva's just fighting better right now.
It was a weird – this one – here's the thing is that I think it's a situation where, like, Chris Weidman's been around for a long time. He makes a lot of money. So you can't put him up against nobody, right? If he's going to fight, you can't put him up against nobody. You got to put him up against somebody because you're paying him a lot of money to be in there. But this just didn't feel like a very – nice one from the UFC matchmakers, man. Like, he's fighting in Atlantic City down the road from his hometown. I think a lot of us thought it was going to be his retirement fight. I think he's saying maybe not. Maybe he's going to continue on. But yeah, I took Bruno Silva as well. So a lot of other fun names on here. Bill Algeo, I think it could be a very fun fight with Kyle Nelson, who I thought Kyle Nelson looked really, really good last time out. Chidi Njokuani is there against Reese McKee. Nate Landwehr is on the card. You know, anytime Nate Landwehr is on a card, it's going
to
be fun.
They brought him to Media Day.
They brought Nate Landwehr?
They brought Nate and Jamal Emmers to Media Day. They skipped over two fights on the main card to bring the featured prelim.
I didn't even see Nate's Media Day today. I guess I missed that one.
Yeah.
That's funny.
They didn't bring the Chidi McKee fight, and they didn't bring Algeo Nelson fight.
I wonder if that's a situation where the card shuffled after they made the – because you know how it works. They make the schedule week out. I think the UFC's goal is to get it to the fighters the Friday before they travel out. So, maybe the card shuffled. So I wonder if that was a mistake, or I wonder if somebody was just like, man,
he's done some great media days.
Yeah, that's why I wonder if they were just like, let's put Nate the Train out there.
I assume that's what it was. I mean, like, the dude, like, when he is on, it's just fire. And
he's hilarious.
Sometimes he gets going on tangent, you can barely understand what he's saying, but you know it's fire. You know, like, he's quite the entertainer.
He really is, man. He's fun. Obviously, with it being Atlantic City, a New Jersey card, obviously CFSC with deep ties to the area. Some guys that I'll certainly be cheering for that came through. Dennis Bazookia is on there. Andre Petroski is on there as well. Bill Algeo on there. So I think some fun matchup. Again, another card that it feels similar to last week in that it really is mainly in terms of rankings and in terms of what matters. It's the main event, and ironically, it happens to be in the exact same division, women's flyweight. And the rest of it, I thought last week was a pretty fun card, but to be honest with you, I enjoyed it.
Always good to see Lupi on a card.
Mm-hmm.
Victoria Dudakova Gato fight. Yeah, that should be it. The technique is just going to be impressive.
I know that's what you're most impressed with. Lupi against Virna Jancihova.
That's a legit good fight.
That's a really good stylistically. Yeah. Like
I picked Lupi, but man. Jandaroba is a beast, dude.
She really is. So.
She is amazing. Like, she could easily beat up on Lupi, and will I be sad watching that? Yes, but Vernon definitely can win that fight.
I was actually surprised to see Lupi as big of a favorite as she is.
It's just
that
people.
Fight.
I think just people love Lupi.
You have to.
You know,
right?
I mean, like, she's been doing the media rounds and doing other stuff. I mean, she's just fun. I mean, she's cute as all get out, and she fights her ass off.
She grinds. She grinds. Well, cool, man. Well, it's a Saturday evening card, so another one of those late nights. Poor Nolan King. I mean, I guess he's used to it. He's an East Coast guy anyway, right? Like, they're going to be wrapping up around 1 a.m.
I always brutalize his name, Anton
Trkulish.
Like, this guy, I mean, I think we all thought this dude was just going to run over some dudes, and he's having a bad run of events. If he doesn't pull this one out, he's gone. He's on a 3-fight losing streak. He comes in there. He talks all the talk during the fight week and does everything. And then, like, he's just had some bad showing these last events. Because I think the dude's super, super talented, man. Mm-hmm. These last bouts, we haven't seen it, man. But it'd be a shame that if he can't stick around. Because, I mean, ladies love the pleasure, man, according to him. You know, like, he's good for the numbers and stuff. But, yeah, man, if he doesn't pull out a win, man, I think this is the last time we're going to see the Pleasure Man in the old UFC.
That's rough, man. You're
it
right.
happens.
I hate to say that, but it's the
it
truth.
It happens.
That's the truth. All right, well, listen, late night card, or late evening card, I guess, which I prefer those just for the pay-per-views, but it is.
Sitting on the couch watching it, and I'll be liking
You'd
that.
You'd be okay with that?
I'm okay. I'm okay.
I dig it. Well, I'll certainly be watching as well. Of course, we will have a half episode for everybody that supports us over at patreon.com/the MMA Roadshow. So we certainly appreciate everybody that does that. And appreciate everybody that supports us, rates us, and reviews us if they can. All that stuff helps us out. You and I will be back together next week before I fly out to Savannah, Georgia for a Fury grappling event. So if you want to put that on your radar for next Thursday night, we certainly would appreciate you joining us all there. Myself and Colton Smith will be on the card there. And then the following week, we get into the chaos of UFC 300,
woo,
CFFC 131, PFL, Power Slap, if you will. I mean,
whatever
just all,
Power Slap number that one is.
Power, it's all going on. So the schedule's about to get crazy. The April run's about to get nuts. So buckle up. We'll cover it all for you, talk about it all, of course. But more than anything, just know that we appreciate you. Thanks for listening. Ha ha ha!